You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I stood for mayor because there was no other candidate that I felt I could support. I'd gladly vote for Mike King or even Jason Gunn, although I don't know if he's an Aucklander, but he'll do. But there we are. I most certainly didn't want to be a non-voter, but whose name could I put a tick next to? So my only choice was to come up with some ideas that I thought would help the city and throw my name into the ring. And so here I am.
Lovely.
Brendan B. Madden, candidate for mayor.
Lovely.
Yeah.
So you kind of mentioned there that there's no one that you would have put a tick next to end
no.
of the day. So what do you see being the role of the mayor, and what does a mayor really need to bring to the table for you to back them?
Right. Well, basically a vision for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And some big ideas for the change that the city needs to go through. While sure, double-decker harbour bridges are a big idea, I'm not 100% sure how viable that is. So I couldn't support a pie-in-the-sky concept. And at the same time, Mr. Goff has come up with very little, if anything. It's going to be business as usual for the next 3 years there. And I think that's 3 years wasted. We really do need to push things forward and move the city into the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
But the vision was lacking. And so I couldn't complain about it to my friends all day without actually doing something about it.
Mm.
You know, put my money where my mouth is.
Nice.
Wow.
So amongst campaigning, I guess what is really important to talk about is the ideas you have. So what are kind of the five big things you'd like to see change, or what you'd be advocating for
right.
if you were elected?
Well, I am standing with a policy trident, central to which is my, the concept of plastic roads.
Mm.
Currently, we have a big old pile of plastic that's being added to every 2 weeks in open-air landfills surrounding the city. That's only going to grow, and it's a ticking time bomb of an ecological disaster. Meanwhile, we have crumbling roads that are not fit for purpose. There exists the emerging technology of being able to reseal roads in plastic, plastic roads, and a number of various different options there. I feel that dragging that waste plastic back into the city and trapping it in our roads would forever stop it from being washed into the seas, and would actually be, a good economical sense. Waste plastic is currently at an all-time low as far as price goes, so it makes sense on a number of levels. So resealing our roads, basically rebuilding our roads, redesigning them to be as efficient as possible to cut down on congestion and the emissions congestion causes. And of course, the plastic roads are remarkably maintenance free. So we'd be saving millions each year on road maintenance. But of course, there's the capital cost. So that is an issue. I'd recommend a profit making municipal fund. But that's a matter for, discussions down the track.
Yeah.
The first things first, let's get the vision out there.
Yeah.
Standing next to the plastic roads, I'd like to see more fair fares for the public transport users, which in short means a repeal of the fare box recovery rate regime that's been imposed on us by Wellington, where a certain percentage of the operating costs of the public transport has to be paid by the fare payers who use it, which on the surface sounds fair, except that, I don't know if you noticed, but Auckland Transport is a bit of a burgeoning bureaucracy, a out of control, some have called it, and the operating costs are spiraling. Those people that do take the bus to work and now support in all sorts of other projects through their fares, which has given us the third highest or third most expensive public transport system in the world.
Mm.
No one's going to get out of their car to jump onto the third most expensive bus in the world.
Mm.
And especially given it's not the third best service in the world.
Yeah.
So if we were getting value for money, then I think you'd find a lot more people would be abandoning their vehicles and taking the comfortable, quality public transport. But as it stands, We can't expect people to actually abandon their cars when we're not offering anything better. So the first thing we have to do is rein in those fares. We have to get some sort of reasonable pricing involved. Of course, speaking to the government, next year's an election year, though, should have some leverage there.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, evening classes.
Mm.
I just think they're a good idea.
Yeah.
We used to have them. We can have them again. They build community, build confidence, and education builds prosperity. So I believe it's incumbent upon the council to promote those three things and more through evening classes and wider education.
Mm.
For example, I believe it's the Albert Eden Ward has something called Smart Computer Skills for Seniors. These classes, those sort of things can be rolled out citywide. I'm sure there are plenty of older people out there who would like to bridge that digital divide, and plenty of younger people out there who would like to learn the lost skills of cooking and gardening, two essentials, given that we're going to have to decentralise the way we grow food. Auckland's sprawling across some of the finest farmland in the country. People's backyards are now some of the most fertile in the land. So why not put them to use as they're intended?
Mm. That's an interesting... I definitely want to touch on a lot of what you just said, but that's an interesting thing in terms of asking the public to get involved. How would you go about getting the public to offer up their backyards for growing food?
Well, I offer up. I mean, they'd be the one doing the gardening.
Yeah.
But really, it's just a change of mindset from the more aesthetic sort of people who want to show off their backyards as a pretty thing to those who want to show off their backyards as a productive thing. I know plenty of people who do grow vegetables, and they're quite proud of their chutneys and relishes and such, and with good reason, because, of course, they've seen it growing from a seed to the jar. It's quite the achievement. And so I don't really want to get people to do things, but I want to show them why it's really a good idea to get, I mean, for a start, a hobby. Hobby's great. And, it would teach any children you have lying around about the value of growing things and the where their food comes from. And it gives them a wider understanding of the world as it works. So there are many advantages, but I don't think, as I say, it's my place to say you must turn your backyard into a vegetable patch. But, promote them. Let people
gentle
know.
Encouragement.
Gentle encouragement and basically education.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lovely. Now, another thing you noted there was one of your big concerns being congestion.
Hmm.
You kind of indicated that you think the quality of our roads are contributing to congestion. What are the other attributing factors there, do you think?
Right. Well, it's the quality of the roads, but also the efficiency of the roads, the design. We've basically been patching a series of road networks together with no overview of traffic flows, or at least as little overview. For the actual design of lanes and integration, say the intersections, for example. So redesigning the roads from the ground up with efficiency in mind, using the 21st century technologies such as smart traffic light systems that actually know what the traffic flow is doing. I don't know if you've sat at traffic lights when there's been no traffic coming from any other direction, burning petrol, pumping that into the atmosphere, for no good reason. So basically reworking our roads while we rebuild them. Now my first focus is getting that waste plastic out of our countryside and trapping it in our roads. But while we do that, I'm quite sure that we can come up with some efficiencies to move traffic forward while we rebuild.
The big concern, even just for me on a personal level, is that with the plastic roads, you're melting that plastic down, which is going to result in emissions.
Right. Well, it's processed rather than melted, and you're not simply melting the plastic onto the road. For example, some formulas mix plastic in with asphalt to provide the best of both worlds solution. Mm-hmm. Some 3D print plastic. But as far as emissions go, yes, I mean, obviously they should be limited. The whole point mm-hmm. is to do something that's better for the planet. You're right, if there is a blowback, depending on the formula used, then, yeah, we don't use that formula.
Yeah, and also, but even just trying to treat plastic as like a single thing, cause plastic has lots of things added into it in terms of color or plasticizers. Mm-hmm. So it has lots of additives, and we don't really know how those things are always going to work in kind of a homogeneous kind of model of reshaping it. Is that something that's concerning to you?
Well, there have been studies done about the various potential chemical leaching from plastic roads. Mm. So from what I've seen, no, it's not a concern. It's not a major concern for a start. Mm. The plastic is leaching everything right now in those waste dumps. So that's not really, it's certainly not going to leach any less or more. But potential negative effects from plastic. They're testing these roads right now in Europe and India. We'd have the data to go on, and we'd be able to see whether or not that is the case. But from the looks of it, no. The roads do trap those chemicals rather well. Mm. And asphalt roads, for a start, are not emissions-free.
No.
So it is, unfortunately, you know, one of those things you have to weigh up.
Yeah.
There are good and bad in everything, but I believe the good vastly outweighs the bad as far as plastic roads go, especially since we don't have many other options for the hundreds of tons of plastic we do have, thousands of tons in the ocean, and of course the many thousands of tons we've already shipped to Asia, which now despoils their countries. Mm. So really we've got to find a big use for a large amount of plastic, or it's just going to either be buried or wash into the sea.
Mm. And the thing is, do you think it is potentially that you're placing a Band-Aid on what is a massive issue?
Well, no, I'd call it more a full body cast.
Mm.
The volumes involved in rebuilding Auckland's roads would easily see our waste plastic soaked up.
Mm.
So the plastic you put into your recycling bins would actually be recycled for once. Then beyond that, I believe we have the volumes of roads to deal with pretty much all of New Zealand's plastic, if not the South Pacific's. So it's not a Band-Aid as such. It is a use for the waste plastics and they're not going anywhere once we put them in the roads.
Mm.
So it is a solution. Mm. But it's not a cheap solution. We'll be rebuilding roads.
Yeah.
So, but then, as Bill Knight said, change isn't cheap.
No.
So we have to do something. We have to be prepared to pay for it.
Yeah. And, I mean, if that is something you're looking at doing, we would be looking at potentially more congestion with roadworks to implement that. How do you mitigate those effects?
Right. Well, obviously there will be roadworks.
Yeah.
But
always roadworks.
Well, that's the thing. With asphalt roads, there are always roadworks. With plastic roads, once they're down, they, depending on the formula, have a life cycle 3 to 10 times longer than asphalt roads, require practically no maintenance, don't develop potholes, don't develop cracks. So once down, once those roadworks are done, that's it.
Mm.
We should be able to wash our hands of any further for the next 10 to 50 years, depending on the formula we use, because, as I say, they don't need the constant roadworks that asphalt does, because it breaks and cracks, and poor temperature range. So basically plastic will be do it once, do it right sort of option.
Mm. And then also something you have noted is the out-of-control rent prices.
Oh, yes.
That is a concern for you.
It is.
Yes. how would you, as mayor, go about mitigating that?
Right. Well, obviously, there are limited levers that the mayor can pull. Mm. But one of them that I feel that has been ignored is basically residential property that's been land banked and boarded up and just taken for the equity gains. Mm. In my opinion, residential property that isn't rented out or used as a home isn't residential. It's a business. Mm. It's a glorified bank account. And so the financial incentive for doing that should be removed through the rates mechanism. Basically, higher rates for those residential properties that aren't being used to house people. And from there, we should be able to free up approximately 50,000 homes, mm-hmm. should everyone come aboard and rent out those abandoned buildings. Mm. So basically, that's that. And from there, of course, working with central government, getting them to actually build those 50,000 new houses that they promised, but mm-hmm. appear to have rolled them back on.
Yeah, a little bit of roadblocks there.
There are a few roadblocks, yes. But then I'm a build up, not out sort of guy. Mm. We should get some medium density building suburbs going on, if not entire suburbs, then at least centres, where, you know, beautiful, tasteful townhouses can take the place of, well, three or four of those can take the place of one house or one abandoned warehouse or what have you, and bring down the property prices and rentals from there, actually getting some supply going on. Mm. I think the issue with those 50,000 homes was they couldn't find enough green space to build them on.
Yeah.
Well, then build up, not out. Mm. So if there's no space left, what choice does the city have? We have to house our people. But speaking of housing, of course, there's the homeless.
Yeah.
I've recently had a wander down Queen Street. The place is a shanty town. Mm. I believe Mr. Goff has gone and counted them and has found 830-odd homeless or next-to-homeless people in the city. He's counted them, hasn't actually offered a solution. Mm. I'd recommend clusters of tiny home communities centered around a caregiver's home. Basically, they're space efficient, cheap, comfortable, secure, and provide dignity for those who do find themselves on the streets or are living in a car or a garage or the many other subpar accommodation solutions that are going on around mm. the city. So get use the 21st sector technology of tiny homes. They've been well designed and they're basically, from what I've seen, very comfortable and provide, as I say, dignity for those who are currently sleeping on the streets in third world conditions. Mm. And it's really not a very good look for a city that claims to be the capital of the South Pacific, the jewel of New Zealand, when we, say, for example, invite foreign businessmen here and ask them to invest in the city. And what do they drive through to get to the town hall? A shanty town of basically third world proportions. Mm. So it's for the good of the entire city that we show that we can care for our most vulnerable, mm. not just for those people, but for all the citizens involved.
Mm. It's interesting. In terms of speaking about homeless people, oftentimes we kind of boil it down to those people are homeless and that's how they're vulnerable. What other mm. kind of support do you think those people might need that the council could offer?
Well, that the council could offer, yes. Apart from housing yeah. and, as I say, an on-site caregiver, there's obviously the various programs that a person may need to move forward in their lives. There's drug and alcohol rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to think that the evening classes would give people a purpose and the skills to move forward. Mm-hmm. So basically, we've got to work with those people and with the organisations that help those people to lift them up, not simply give them more blankets and make their life on the streets a little more comfortable, mm-hmm. which, of course, in the meantime, we probably should do that too. But the focus should be on getting them under a roof.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that currently that is the focus. Mm. Currently we're counting them.
Yeah.
That's not good enough.
Mm. Now, something as well in terms of the housing conversation that's come up amongst this mayoral candidacy, people campaigning, Phil Goff has said he's looking to raise the rates. Is that something you would support?
Social programs, yeah, do generally cost money.
Yeah, they do.
So, my first go-to wouldn't be rates, but let's face it, it's the only mechanism we have at the moment. I'd prefer a profit-making municipal fund. Treasury's just lowered the price of money to next to nothing. We could release municipal bonds at 3%. Apparently, we're the financial capital of the South Pacific as well. So we should have financial firms that could make 5 to 8% return on a fund, giving us 3 to 5% in profit, minus fees, to actually work with. So we don't have to lean on ratepayers every time some guy comes along with a crazy idea to house the homeless. So that's how I'd like to see it. Our local municipality funded through a sizable fund that makes money can be an asset for generations to come. But of course, currently at the moment, the only mechanism we've got is to raise rates, which is not my preferred option. But I'm going to focus on getting people housed, so we're going to need the money.
Yeah. So definitely not putting it on the back burner.
Look, I signed up because I believe we need to change. Mm. We need to change now. And nothing's going on the back burner.
Mm.
No.
Mm.
It's not my focus.
Good.
Well, thank you. But,
And I guess another thing, just in terms of campaign coverage we have seen across the board, it has kind of, in mainstream media, boiled down to a Phil Goff versus John Tanhede show. How do you feel about that, and why do you think it's very important to still, even as a smaller candidate, run?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, well, there's not much you can do about mainstream media's obsession with their darlings.
Versus games.
So all I can do is put forward some ideas. And maybe if I get a percentage of the vote, politicians who control the political life landscape of New Zealand will pick up on those ideas because they'd see it, they have some support. For myself, no, I can't see myself being taken seriously by the mainstream media. I'm just a guy with a couple of ideas. So, you know, they don't know who I am, and probably best that way, quite frankly. Let's face it. What do I need the cameras on my front lawn for? But that being said, I would like that ideas to be promoted a little more widely. You may have noticed from my website that I have no photos of me. It's not about me. It's not even about my name, really, but that's what's on the ballot paper, so I've got to push that. It's about moving the city forward, and hopefully the country forward with it, by doing something about our waste plastic, by doing something about our homeless, actually doing something rather than fanciful harbour bridges and more trees in our forestries. So that's why I put my name forward, even though, yes, there's very little chance that I'd get mainstream media traction.
And I guess kind of the last thing I might end on here is, why do you think you are the right person to run this city?
I'm not sure that I am. Like I say, I would love to see a Mayor Mike King or another notable person who's put in the hard work with the community and can bring that forward into the role. I'm an IT guy. I'm a systems guy. You know, I've had a look at the system of the Auckland machine, and it's pretty inefficient. So that's what I'd bring to the role of mayor. I'd rework the system of the Auckland machine, the machine that keeps roadworks going 24/7 and you know, does get our garbage collected, so but then goes and dumps them in a field down south. So there are things to work on there, and I can see that. And so whether or not I'm a leader, couldn't say, but I am a systems analysis, And so this system needs some very serious analysis and reworking. So that's basically why I put my name forward, and why, if by some miracle, I should happen to be voted in as mayor, then I believe that, yeah, I could hit the ground running and we'll see what we can do with this city. But that seems unlikely. So right now my focus is getting on the ideas out there, and maybe they'll act as fertilizer for the next few elections. But you're all right. It's the Phil and John show at the moment. Mm. So let's see which of those dancing bears gets the crown.
Well, I mean, I might just carry this on a little bit. Saying it's the Phil and John show, do you think our democratic process is flawed in that way?
Hmm. I can't blame the democratic process.
Mm-hmm.
It's the media process, or the what people want to consume as media. People like the idea of these two guys going at it, mono a mono. It is a show. It's
entertainment politics.
Entertainment politics, exactly. And neither of them have any actual policies to put forward, no vision for the future. They're not concerned, I don't think, with an actual vision for the future. They're focused on the John and Phil show as well. So really, I guess that's the best advantage that an outsider has. While these two are going at it, maybe the country, will get sick of the two of them. A third party candidate might look more attractive.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.